If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come. This is the Eat, Sleep, Believe, Repeat podcast, your weekly AEW review and breakdown. Introducing first, the most electrifying and all of professional wrestling podcasts.
Charlie.
Vegas is here.
Vegas, trying to throw down your bets, everybody. Oh, by the way, I am the Digital Duke. I am the Digital Phantom, also known as Bane Duke. What's up, everybody?
All yes, right.
They also call me Garrett sometimes, but I don't know. I don't know if I want to use that name anymore.
Occasionally,
you'll hear me referred to by that on this show. So I guess I should throw that in there as well. Oh wow, the season finale, Charlie! Wow, can you believe it?
Yep. Season finale. Eat, sleep, believe, man. We our cycle runs through Double or Nothing, and that means we're gonna facelift next week, baby.
Absolutely, the show's gonna be different, but it's gonna be better. You gotta come with the improvements over time. You know,
Dave,
I don't know if you all have noticed this from listening over the course of this. Those of you that do listen week to week, but when we first started the show, we didn't have any of the sound effects. Well, we might have had some of the stuff. I forget what all we had. To be honest with you, I'd have to go back. Like, I didn't take notes on the stuff we had, but like, you know, we've been slowly making improvements to the show over time. We hope that shows, but just before we get into the good stuff, like our favorites, AW Dark, Elevation and Dark, and the rest of the shows, there's a couple of orders of business. Wow, I just fumbled all over my words there. There's a couple of orders of business to take care of off the top, the first of which being our Twitters. You can take us, our Twitters, you can follow us on. You can follow me at Bane Duke, like I said at the top of the show. That's BaneDuke. And you can follow Charlie at OCharlie with an X instead of an A. Nailed the second one, screwed up the first one. Genius. All right. But there's also, there's obviously various podcasts. I am just a flub machine tonight. Multiple podcasts. This is a banger episode. Botchamania. All right. There's multiple podcast platforms you might be listening to us on, be that Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. Make sure you follow or subscribe on your platform of choice. Leave us a review and let us know if you have any questions you want us to try and answer, any, you know, like favorite matches of all time. We'll have to do shows like that at some point. We keep talking about doing all these companion shows, and we don't always do them. But
depending on when you guys are listening, I mean, we got about 5 hours of content coming at you within the next like 30 hours on our end.
You're gonna be inundated with ESC for the next couple days.
If you're listening to Eat Sleep Elite on Sunday, chances are our Double or Nothing predictions are posted right now, which will be recording instantly after, and they'll be in your feeds relatively soon. And then Sunday,
like the latest would be like Sunday morning, I would think, right? Like,
yeah. And then Sunday, our tradition is we cover the pay-per-view as soon as it's done. Yep. We like to try and get it uploaded as soon as you guys want, or, you know, maybe in Monday, most people are going to be off work, or if you are working, I mean, you got your podcast to listen to throughout the day, and we really appreciate that. So
yeah, like on your lunch break or whatever, you know, when you're like thinking about, oh man, That match between CM Punk and Adam Page was just awesome. I wonder what the boys think about it. You know, you can come and look.
They want to know our thoughts on Paige Van Zandt's debut. I mean, they just want to know.
Bro. Absolutely.
So, Garrett, we didn't even discuss who's going first for favorites this week, but I'm assuming it's you.
I think I went first last week, but I don't know. I could actually check really quickly, but I don't know if that means. I don't actually know, but
Just go. In the final edition with this, I guess, intro music, we call it.
Yeah,
you take the lead here. What was your favorite segment match, you name it, of the week?
So in a true, you know, Marvel movie fashion, the end is in the beginning. We're starting at the end tonight with the last match that we actually saw this week, which was Chris Statlander versus Ruby Soho, the final semifinal match, what a weird phrasing, of the Owen Hart Memorial Cup Tournament. All right, which I don't think we've actually called it one time on the show. I think we've just called it the Owen or something like that. But it doesn't really matter. Everyone knows what we're talking about. Bro, this match was just – I just pulled a Vince Russo at you. Anyway, But anyway, bro, so this match, bro, it was insane. So actually, no, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that for the whole segment. But anyway, so there was so many like small touches in this match that I'll just like highlight a few of right now. It was just like a perfect like kind of match that I like. It's kind of crazy. And this is not like a knock on women's wrestling. I really do enjoy a lot of the like WWE's like Women's Evolution that happened and like all the insane wrestlers that they brought up from the indie scene that like they would have never hired years ago or whatever, you know, kind of breaking that stigma. I was like super supportive of that. And I really liked a lot of those matches a lot more than what a lot of the men were doing at the time. But in AEW traditionally, like they just don't have like, it's been so awesome with the Owen getting multiple women's matches like all the time throughout multiple cards, you know, like. It's just been great because, and we've also had feuds in the background. Like we finished up with Serena and Shida, and we also had stuff with Britt Baker, you know, and obviously all the stuff that's going on with the baddies right now. So we are just inundated with AEW women's wrestling, which is what we've been asking for a while. Match that in the Owen has from the women has been one of my favorites, I think, pretty much for the most part.
I think we're on a streak of at least 3 weeks in a row of one of us picked a favorite from them for sure. I
mean, absolutely. And it's, you know, and obviously this is a match we saw a while back when Ruby Soho first got to AEW, during the TBS title tournament. And that was a phenomenal match itself. You know, there was like a small hesitation by Ruby, which is just like a nice little touch. That's like Ruby's, you know, wrestling IQ being like, oh, this was my friend. You can use this, you know, that's real. People talk about storytelling. Literal storytelling.
And to piggyback off that idea.
Stat played it perfectly.
I love the idea of Statlander working as the big.
Yes. It's beautiful. Sorry. I needed to cough there. No problem.
And I think it worked very well. And I gotta say, so just a little statistic for you guys here. This was the first post 10-minute match of the Owen Hart Women's Tourney. This match went above 10 minutes, and I feel like it was deserved.
Yes.
And I feel like Rampage really just doesn't get these numbers.
No, it absolutely. And it's crazy. There was a clothesline that Stat rocked Ruby with where I think Ruby just took just ate a forearm basically to the face, and it was just like, ew, but ow, and oh, you know, like and then there was like, oh dude, the Hurricane Rana they hit off the like the middle rope, bro, that was so clean looking. At first I thought they like fucked it up, but it actually was just perfect, you know what I mean, because they flip a little weird, but it was on purpose. Like, I think they just, like, knew the weight differential was going to be weird on the flip, so they just had Stat just do, like, a front flip or something. Like, it was wild.
And that to me, I agree. Yeah.
And then they countered that into a powerbomb. I mean, it's just, like, the only thing that I really disliked about it was, like, Ruby getting booed at the end. But, like, go ahead and say what you were going to say.
I wasn't a fan of the booing.
Finishing up there, like... it sucks that Ruby got booed at the end of it because this was just a really well put together match.
Agreed. So, yeah, going off of that, and I'm with you, man. I really think Statlander, Soho, and we've had my favorite Red Velvet match of hers recently. I loved Jamie Hayter versus Toni Storm. And now I'm excited for this finale, man. And we'll dive into that a little more for our predictions. But to me, this is the right call for the finish. Soho and Britt Baker, you know?
Yeah, it just sucks that the crowd wasn't, like, really, like, they didn't really, like, I don't know. I think I said something to you before we started the show, which was, like, it was just the unfortunate, and we'll get to it when we talk about it, but it was just unfortunate timing that Stat just cut, like, a really great promo, you know, in the pre-match, which...
It was so... Yeah, we might actually... Yeah, that promo...
So we'll come back to that, but I think it's why the crowd went a certain way, because they were already, like, super deep into... You know, what would this have been? This would have been like the third hour of wrestling. So it's like, you know, like, well, no, wait, how many would that be, including Dark? I don't know. It really depends. But like, you know,
yeah, because so they shot a special live Dark which we'll cover next week.
Oh, yeah. So if they do, yeah, we're going to cover that next week because they literally dropped it like right before we were about to record.
Yeah,
it's
really annoying. Yeah, we don't need to add that to this. So,
like, we could have stretched another hour, but it would have been super late. Like, no one needed us to do that. Like, we'll get to it eventually. Exactly. But,
we'll jump into my favorite now. And it's a match and a segment, I'd say.
Okay.
For me, it's the Wardlow versus Shawn Spears. They could have gimmicked the hell out of the steel cage, and you could have had Wardlow just jump up and get out of it, but they made sure that is not the case here. They went – I loved the match itself. I loved the story being told around it, and MJF taking the chair shot to the head, to me, was the cherry on top of this feud. It wasn't Wardlow that delivered the blow, but he still got hit. And yes. I'm just – whether it's – for weeks in the buildup of Wardlow's turn, you saw him and Shawn Spears having little things here. Like, Wardlow would go for one more powerbomb and Shawn Spears wouldn't let him. Or Shawn Spears would constantly take his spotlight. And this has been a story building between these two guys, which aren't even the main feud, for like 6 months.
And what's awesome is instead of just building up Shawn Spears as like just like a guy who's going to lose to him, like what happened with CM Punk, you know, Shawn Spears literally beat like multiple like people in that weight class in the last couple weeks.
And it's been fun.
Incredibly. And it made him look like an absolute monster killer, you know, and like, and I'll let you continue, but like, just
whew. Yeah. And we didn't have it on the news, but one of those was going to be Karrion Kross or Killer Kross. And he said, you know what? I think I want to be presented in a different manner. So he backed out of it.
Yeah, did you hear the reason why? They were going to present him like the WWE did, basically, from what I heard. Like,
yeah, and he was going to lose Scarlett. Like this. I just like, don't
no
think
Scarlett. You know. Okay, let me just say, if Karrion Kross comes to WWE as Killer Kross without Scarlett Bordeaux, I'm going to be upset. I'm just going to be honest with you.
Yeah, the Scarlett thing's just so good now. But yeah, man, this match, I don't – when I say something like Shawn Spears is a great hand for the company, that's not a rag on him. Think of like Mara Jade being the Emperor's hand, right? Like – Shawn Spears being in this spot has elevated this feud to another level, and
Shawn Spears should absolutely have at least a shot, if not a run, with the TNT Championship. I don't know why people look at Shawn Spears and they're like, "Yeah, there's nothing there." Like everyone has always looked at him that way. That's why he was at WWE developmental for like almost there for like 20 years or something. Like he had a wrestling career in developmental or something. Like I don't mean to rag on the guy, but like it's
and, you know, and he got to say stuck. He also yeah and. Another thing I really liked, also the Swanton Bomb. We know Jeff Hardy, Wardlow. It came out the past couple of days. Wardlow actually asked Jeff Hardy about that, and Hardy said, "Hey man, go for it." So he loves the way he does it himself. Wardlow just keeps adding to this move set. He's just a fucking star, man. And breaking the handcuffs, I thought was a great touch too.
Bro, if Hardy is going to pass that move down to anybody, I mean, I would love for it to be, you know, I mean, it looks like, didn't Nyla hit one a little while back? Like, I could be wrong.
Maybe now that Jeff's there, they're trying to get in on it and be like, hey, man, what's
the deal? Well, Nyla hit one before, remember? Because I remember I sent you a meme that was like, that Nyla posted that was like Nyla, death of Nyla Swanton as soon as Jeff debuted, you know, like,
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, so
I don't. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, pretty sweet stuff. So, those were our favorites this week. We have a couple news things. If I'm missing something, maybe just you go ahead and slip it in there. But
I don't have any news written down, unfortunately.
Andrade and Charlotte got married, and actually both companies tagged each of them. Cool. You know, little things like that, man. I love seeing it. They're both stars for each company, so we love to see it. And then a quick Best of Super Juniors update. In the A block, at 10 points each, we have Ace Austin and Taiji Ishimori. At 8 points, we got Hiromu Takahashi and Alex Zane and Sho. And let me just say, holy shit, Alex Zane is over in Japan. They showed autograph lines for each wrestler. Alex Zane was probably like 7 times the amount of people compared to everyone else.
That's crazy.
The tour of Alex Zane, and we'll get into Great Okan. And the tour of Great Okan and the tour of Takeshita, these guys are getting over on the internet in opposite countries because of how likable they are. And Alex Zane is now – honestly, if I were them, I'd say fuck what we were doing. Let's push Zane to the top now. But I'm cool with Ace Austin doing it too.
Wasn't like Uemura just in like an actual like pay-per-view style match or something? Like,
yeah, and on New Japan Strong. Yep. So
yeah, like a strong, like, yeah. Like, shout outs, like, and they had him like on there with like somebody major. I can't remember who it was, but it was like somebody big. I was like, that's pretty crazy.
And at 6 points, we had Yo, Clark Connors, and Francesco Akira. And then 4 points, we had Yoshinobu Kanemaru and Ryusuke Taguchi. So that's our A block. Again, the A block is fucking, it's beautiful. The B block, El Desperado and El Fantasmo at 10 points each. So our theory of those guys probably kind of running away with it are so far so true. Robbie Eagles, El Lindemann, and Wheeler Yuta all have 8 points. So shout out Wheeler Yuta. TJP, Doki, Bushi all have 6, and then Master Wato and Titan have 4. So far in 7 matches, you can kind of see no one's undefeated. 10 points means you're 5-2, so on and so forth. So we're getting towards the end here. We're starting to cross the getting near the finish line, less than a week away. So next week we'll be talking about the finals. And yeah, I'm excited for it, man.
Absolutely.
I got to say though, Hiromu Takahashi and Alex Zane fucking crushed it, and I can't help but root for Alex Zane. He's if you guys have heard this before, you're like, oh, here he goes again. He's one of our 205 Live guys that we always talk about, whether it's Anthony Green, Alex Zane, Blake Christian. Fuck it, we can add Anthony Henry to the list. And we had another one on AEW Rampage this week, and Tyler Rust.
Yep.
So these 205 Live guys that worked their ass off with no one watching in 2020, I love seeing them get work, and I will always root for them.
So, absolutely.
That being said, Garrett, that was it for news. Again, shout out Wheeler Yuta. He's 4-3. So since last time we talked, he hasn't lost. That's a good sign.
Pick up the pace, buddy. You got to win the thing.
Yeah, and who's going to get fucking replaced sooner or later if he doesn't keep this? You better win. Shout out Dante Martin. Garrett, let's give the people the elevation results for this week.
AEW Dark Elevation episode 64 kicked off with All Ego Ethan Page, accompanied by Dan Lambert with Scorpio Sky on commentary. This was as pure of a squash as you get in AEW. Not that you don't get them, but this was like a straight up squash. And Scorpio Sky just popped big. I think Scorpio Sky said something silly or something. I can't remember what it was. But whatever.
And real quick, not to bury the lead, I'm so fucking happy for Ethan Page right now. Just getting on the pay-per-view, man.
Oh, absolutely.
I love it.
Yeah, one of our boys, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Picked up the win with the Ego's Edge. In match number two, we had Mercedes Martinez taking on a jobber for the, I think it basically was, right? For the Ring of Honor Women's World title.
Yeah, they didn't even, yeah.
6-7 minutes.
I guess to get Mercedes Martinez on TV, they're just going to have her put her belt on the line against anyone.
Cool. I mean, I'm cool with that, but
It adds some stakes to a whether otherwise meaningless match.
I'm not sure about like having title matches all the time on Dark. I'm cool with having the champions on Dark, but let's say I don't know if we need to have titles defended all the time.
If it's going to be on Dark, it should be in the main event, right? That's how I feel.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at. Yeah, it should have main evented. But anyway, one with the Brass City Sleeper. We had it was 6-7 minutes. I mean, there wasn't really much they could do, you know. And so then Butcher and the Blade took on Varsity Blondes. There was a little miscommunication from the Blondes here. And then they dragged the lake on them. So it was over pretty quickly. Butcher and the Blade, I guess, needed to win. I mean, the AFO pretty much always lose. It's always been like the meme that we've had on the show about
them. And now they're
in pay-per-view matches all the time, but they lose constantly. It's crazy, but like, you know,
they're more and more becoming reputable heels. So, hey, I'm cool with it.
Heels to Chase definitely one of my favorites. So I remember saying that about Andrade's run in NXT. I remember thinking that like he kind of just chases and he doesn't need to win. And then when he won, it was huge, you know,
got the first ever, NXT 5-star match.
Oof. Anyway, yeah, so then we had actually one of my favorite Dark matches this week, I would say. Alex Reynolds took on Lee Moriarty. There's some good stuff in there. A little more aggressive Lee Moriarty. Maybe he's going to go to the Combat Club. Anyway.
He had a good week on Dark, too.
Mm-hmm. And he picked the one with the Border City Stretch. So credible win over a credible superstar from a good faction in the Dark Order, one of the main members of the Dark Order in Alex Reynolds. So that's pretty big. All right. And in the next match, we had Sky Blue and Yuka Sakazaki taking on Emi Sakura and Nyla Rose. Good. Yeah, that was better than last week. Got more energy. But anyway, so I actually apparently did not take any notes on this match for whatever reason. That's weird. Normally, I take notes on everything.
As far as I know, they just kind of – it looked like they were going to win, but then they got Sakazaki out of the picture so they could pin Sky Blue real quick. That's just kind of what I remember.
Let me look at – actually, I have the dark – I have that thing you have pulled up. Let me look if it says anything here specific.
Yeah, and Sky Blue, man, again, she got a reaction. She always does.
I didn't take any notes on this.
And see, Sky Blue.
Oh, yeah. So I love that top rope splash or whatever the hell that Sakazaki does. Yep. That was one thing beautiful. That. What?
Yeah, it's beautiful. I'm glad she's here, man. I'm loving everything she does.
Yeah. Keep Sakazaki around for a little bit. I like what's going on there. It seems like she's around to stay for a little bit. And then it looks like we picked up the win with the Beast Bomb. Yeah. And then in the main event of AEW Dark Elevation episode 64, we had the Governor, Anthony Ogogo. That was awesome. Take on Mysterious Q. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, picked up the win with the Governor's Hammer. Still not into the 10 count knockout, although on another match with Anthony Ogogo on Dark later this week, they might have fixed that problem. We'll see.
Yeah, and Mysterious Q looks like he's he wrestled a lot at the Reality of Wrestling, so Booker T's thing over in Houston.
Okay, so he's a good brother, you know. He's just
so cool. We always love anyone that I will always support Reality of Wrestling, and I mean, recently we just got AQA into AEW from there, so we see it all the time.
Yeah,
AEW Dark, and my God, here we go. Chris Statlander versus Avery Brew, and I love this. Brew was really crocky for some reason against Statlander. But Statlander just buried her ass.
Literally.
The JAS, Matt Menard, and Angelo Parker. My God. I kind of love this gimmick now as a 2.0. So, new music. Great music, by the way. They defeated Eli Isom and T.U.G. Cooper. They cut a promo before, just kind of, you know, acknowledging who they are and that, you know, we can cut the music when we want. Shit like that. The double jumping DDT from Menard and Parker looks really good. It works, man. This is their first match as a tag since they joined the Jericho Appreciation Society. So it feels like it's been a while since we saw them compared to when we saw them with Garcia, literally wrestling every week. So,
But if they ever tag with Jericho, their name should be Jericho 2.0. Anyway,
I 100% agree. That being said, AQA defeated Brittany Jade. Speaking of AQA, and yeah, mm-hmm. She just hit her swinging netbreaker for the victory, so she's saving that splash, I believe.
All right, before we move on, I have takes on what I think, because seeing AQA again made me think, what would I do with AQA right there on this roster? So, possible ideas that I have here. She could become a baddie, although I don't think that's going to happen. That would be cool, though. I don't know if she fits, but whatever, you know? Do they have to? Or she could take on Jade for the TBS title. That would be awesome, too.
I'm cool.
Or, and this would just be my favorite, I think, because of the match they would have, maybe she could take on Mercedes Martinez for the Ring of Honor title.
I'm into that. Yeah, I'm into that. 100%.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt the flow there.
But no. But speaking of really good things, Lee Moriarty defeated Alan Angels in an incredible dark match. Honestly, best dark match in weeks, I would say. Not even trying to be funny, because a lot of the matches recently that have had good stars in it have been squashes, and this was not the case.
No, yeah, they've just been feeding people records a lot of times, which is what they have to do a lot of times. So it makes Dark boring sometimes.
Lee Moriarty, 2-0 this week, huh?
Yeah, man. Maybe he's going to the club. Maybe he's going to join somebody else. I don't know.
Let's keep an eye on that.
I still think a faction, like, I threw this out there a while ago. Like, now that Jay Lethal has a faction, it'd be even cooler. Like, maybe he joins up with them. Like, I don't know. That'd be cool. You know, he feels like a Ring of Honor guy, right? Like, he feels like a Ring of Honor guy. Come on. You know, like.
And hey, I am down with it. So, that being said, Sonny Kiss defeated Carly Bravo. Nice seeing Sonny Kiss back. Robin Renegade picks up a victory over Vicky Dreamboat. They used Twin Magic. And, I mean, I think the whole thing here is Renegades are picking up wins, Garrett. This is what I want. I want the Renegades to be signed because there is something there.
Okay. Yeah, I think clearly Tony wants to sign them. He keeps bringing them back, you know. People usually don't get brought back like this on Dark Elysium.
They finally got a win, right? Even Tony Schiavone, you know, accusing the Twin Matt. Like, dude, I'm into it, man.
Yeah, Tony was like, nope, I hate you now. You're the Adam Cole of the women's division now.
We had Anthony Ogogo pick up another squash. And the fantastic gut punch shortly after earned a ref stoppage.
Yeah. Do more of that, please, with people like Ogogo. Do you imagine if Wardlow just beat somebody to death, basically, you know, like, and they just called the match? It'd be so awesome. Do you imagine if that's the ending to MJF versus Wardlow? He just beats him until the ref calls for a stoppage. My God.
Leafa Bates got a win in about 60 seconds, and I think the entire time Excalibur was just doing promo reads.
Bro, I don't even think he finished him. I think she was too fast. I think it was too fast. Like, bro.
Roppongi Vice defeated the wingman of Nemeth and Peter Avalon. So Nemeth went from winning a bunch to getting his ass beat. But I got to say, I like this. The dude like busted was hit. And Romero hit the assisted stomp. And that's it. They had a good week. They go on to face FTR. So.
Yeah. Roppongi Vice just out there looking strong. You know what I mean? Like, I hope this becomes like one of the major teams of AEW. I hope they sign Rocky Romero to like a long-term deal, you know, and we get this tag team for us the foreseeable future, you know. And like, yeah. I would love to see a feud between like eventually if they break off, you know, if Roppongi Vice goes and does its own thing eventually, separate from the Best Friends or whatever, you know, it'd be kind of cool to see like maybe Chuck Taylor and Orange Cassidy feud with them or something. That'd be cool.
And the fact that we're both on page with just Roppongi Vice back full time, awesome. We're cool with it.
Yep.
So,
all right.
So I think it's now to get onto the main course here. So, Garrett, starting us off with Dynamite was my favorite. So, going after that, we then jumped to a Jericho Appreciation Society entering the arena. Chris Jericho spots someone wearing a John Moxley shirt, hits him with a fireball, calls himself a wizard. Is the wizard thing working with you? Are you kind of just whatever on it, or are you really liking it?
No, I think it fits. If it fits with the gimmick that they're going for, fine. I mean, I'm not. It's, you know, I'd rather them not do this silliness, but I don't think Jericho is going to stick with the sports entertainment thing forever. Like, I feel like he detests that stuff.
Jericho always evolves, right? So
absolutely, it's like he's almost doing like a throwback to his like 2017 run where he had the weird hair. You know, like
yeah. So cool.
Yeah, whatever,
hey, man. He's a wizard. So. Whatever. So Hangman Page and his challenger, CM Punk, come face to face. Excuse me. Punk says the biggest moment of his career happened in Las Vegas, and this Sunday he will leave Double or Nothing as world champion. Page says there's nothing he can do. Punk says now he understands why he took this so personally. It's just business. Rips the microphone out of Tony Schiavone's hands. Tells Punk that he's going to embarrass him, and he doesn't mean this Sunday. He means right here, right now. Page says he saw himself giving his own version of the infamous pipe bomb promo. Page says he doesn't hate Punk, but he doesn't have any respect for what he's done since he's arrived. Says he talks a big game, but when it comes to his peers, he's doing nothing. So, I mean,
yeah,
pretty good. I think this ends here with Punk shoving him and Page cracks him with a punch that shoves Punk to the mat. And the segment ends and we hit the commercial break, so...
They hit all the points that they wanted to here. I think maybe this could have been like maybe a tiny bit better. I don't know. I just feel like I expect
a little rocky. I'd agree, but I think when they clip it,
they worked their way through it though. It was like Punk took the lead on this and wasn't quite sure where to go with it, which is sometimes, you know, Punk does that sometimes. You know, it's because it's not like a super complicated story they're going for here. You know, I mean, fuck. At the end of this, Hangman might be turning heel. You know what I mean? That's where we're at this point. You know, like
yeah, if Hangman retains, he's got to turn right.
Absolutely. If they do the thing Meltzer's saying and they run it back, you know, at the next pay-per-view, I mean.
Oh, I fucking hope not.
I know. Give me that CM Punk title reign. But anyway, we'll get to that in the next show.
Yeah, so. Yeah, man. I mean, look. He finally punched him. Punk smiled. I think this just affirms the way I see the result going on Sunday. And I just, I can't imagine Punk loses here after this. Like, I'd be shocked. I'll give it to you, man. I would be shocked. I wouldn't be mad.
100% shocked at
the result.
So, and that's why it might happen, because, you know, just like WWE likes to pull the rug out sometimes, Tony Khan's the same way. He loves that feeling of not knowing in wrestling, you know? I've heard him talk about it, you know, that surprises, he loves surprises, you know? So,
So John Moxley and Eddie Kingston, love seeing them team together again. First private party. I like that in AEW, even though they haven't, you know, been working the same programs together. They're still friends. Like, they're still good brothers. They're still going to wrestle. So, this is fun, man. I mean, Eddie Kingston, dude, just coming out to John Moxley's music kind of popped me a little bit, too. I just love it, man. You can tell he's just one of those guys. Isaiah Cassidy, dude. Man. I am a fan of Isaiah Cassidy, especially just... he makes it work all the time, you know?
I like their gear.
Agreed.
It was a different look, and I dug it. They went somewhere. I love when wrestlers do that. Like, I can't think of one. There was a female superstar back in, like, whenever we were reviewing WWE stuff all the time, and they had, like, some really randomly super out there gear for them.
Yeah.
And it popped me, and I was like, oh, this is really good. This is an example of that, I think. They got obliterated, though. I'm so excited for the Anarchy in the Arena match. Man, that's going to be nuts.
Eddie's going to be a lot of fun. So... after the match, Joss rushed the ring, and the brawl begins. Danielson and Santana and Ortiz make the save. So everyone that was kind of worried, like, is this Danielson injury legit? Doesn't look like it. And considering he wrestled on Friday, we got the announcement after this. You know, good to know. We can't have Danielson hurt. But Garrett, I gotta toss something at you.
All right,
you know, a little bit of fantasy booking time, Batiste, to help us out here. So,
all right.
Danielson, the injury may, the fact that he almost got injured again scared me. And I got to say, they can't waste this. At Forbidden Door, just run Bryan Danielson versus Okada.
Oh.
Just get the dream match out of the way, because you never know if you're going to have the opportunity again.
All right.
Right? So,
yeah, I agreed.
Yeah, that's just kind of what I immediately...
Best in North America versus best in Japan. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So that was just where my brain went right away. I'm like, please, God.
Who truly is the best in the world? You know what I mean? Decide it once and for all. You know what I mean?
And let's get some singles matches. And
please let Danielson win, please.
So we had FTR as champions versus Roppongi Vice, the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championship. I'm going to let you take the lead on this, because this was almost your favorite.
It was literally like on the edge. It was for most of the week. Yeah, so it was, dude, it was like, okay, so I love writing this in my notes. It was a slow but a fast start. So it started off really slow, but then boom, it just hit off like a rocket, because that's the way that Rocky and Trent wrestle, you know?
They wrestle fast.
Oh, it's that New Japan style, man. But anyway, by the way, this match makes me really think I so hope that they do something with New Japan with FTR. But anyway, yeah. So Rocky and Cash were like, they just jumped on. I think they did like the double, dive over the top to start it off. Then we got a really nice exchange of chops between Dax and Trent. I forget every now and then how hard Trent hits people, because, you know, like, there's so many people with hard chops. Like, you have Eddie Kingston, but then you have Trent, who's like, doesn't look like he hits that hard, like with a chop specifically. But
Trent,
like,
is not the junior heavyweight he used to be.
Not at all. And Dax, we know, hits like an absolute like hammer, you know, so he's Dax the Axe, you know what I mean? But anyway, and then Cash got an absolutely roar from the crowd in his hot tag, and it all came together with just a beautiful run in by the United Empire, which I believe is obviously going to, it seems like, be setting something up for Forbidden Door, which is just like, it's going to be an incredible match.
Legit DQ, the first DQ since CM Punk and blanking on his name right now, Mr. Vlog Squad, Sean Dean. So our first DQ, 5-6 months? So
yeah, like at the beginning of the MJF CM Punk feud.
This was a legitimately surprising result and a legitimate surprising debut. United Empire is Will Ospreay's faction. And if we get United Empire versus FTR, that is a true Forbidden Door match. Right? And Great O'Conn, we got to talk about this a little bit because we mentioned it earlier. After this match, he's having some fun in Las Vegas, man. He's getting spanked. He's riding a big giant penis. he's just having the time of his life getting over. So, hey, man, this got me even more excited. And the post-match got me even more excited with Great O'Conn doing this. So I'm with you, man. In terms of a whole segment, including the debut, this was up there as one of my favorites too. And this result works for what they're doing. And if it's a triple threat at Forbidden Door, that's cool too. Let's get a title on the line. Fuck it. Send it in.
Yeah. Might as well, right? Send it. Bro, I mean, what was nuts about the course of this week too is like we had like what was it, like two matches, three matches added to the pay-per-view across the course of this week, like which yeah, I didn't expect to happen, you know.
Yeah. There's one on Rampage. I can't believe they added. Back from the break, we see Matt and Jeff Hardy backstage. Matt says he and Jeff have a few similarities to Matt and Nick Jackson. And while they're elite, they're just Hardy Boys cosplayers. Third time we've heard that. And it made sense for what we get to on Rampage.
Absolutely.
So this is their final run. And after the Young Bucks, they're just going to go on to be AEW World Tag Team Champions. And look, man. If they beat the Young Bucks, they absolutely should go for the belts next. We should get a Hardy Boys title run. It's just...
Do we need it now, though?
I hope it's not too long.
Do we want whoever comes out of that triple threat to just be like transitional? You know, does that mean that that Luchasaurus and...
Or they just don't... Or we don't have another winner out of the triple threat, right? So
yeah,
that's going to play into our predictions for sure on what we think could go down. Because they're going...
The
Hardy Boys need a title run. It's just... It's going to happen.
I'm thinking about that match on paper, and I don't know, Luchasaurus wrestles a lot faster than a lot of big guys do, and I don't know if the Hardys can keep up with that anymore, you know, like,
yeah.
Anyway.
They have some pressure on them Sunday, so Swerve Strickland, Ricky Starks, Jungle Boy. I mean, talk about a fast-paced offense going on here, dude. And I gotta say it, man, there is just something about Swerve. Every time he hits the ring, the energy changes. And who does that happen for? Every single time. It's just incredible to me. So, Starks sticking out, Swerve sticking out, Jungle Boy, you name it. I think when the match is all said and done and Swerve hits the super kick and then the Swerve stunt for the 1-2-3 on Starks, I like Swerve winning. I like Jungle Boy not being pinned because, you know, our tag champions don't need to get beaten as often as they sometimes do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they usually kind of gimmick out of it. And this is the kind of one I like. Now, does this set up Ricky Starks potentially being the one to win on Sunday? My God, I hope so, right? What did you think of this one?
Jez, I wrote it was one of those spot fests that I just wrote down a bunch of my favorite spots from. So there was a face buster that was counted into a Hurricane Rana, which is just great wrestling psychology there. Starks matrixing under the turnbuckle, which might have been a shoot. He might have actually been like, shit, I didn't think I was not going to fit under here. But yeah, they kind of duck. He's like, well, so, but either way, it looked awesome. Swerve landing on his feet off of a poison Rana. My God.
Yeah,
they had a wild ending sequence, change trading the finishes, like, and then Keith Lee hitting a tope is not something I thought I'd see in my life.
Oh, that was so good. Yeah.
I didn't think I'd see that.
Post match with all the big guys, dude.
How is it possible Keith Lee can throw himself like that? What?
What? I know, right? What did he do? He got that super soldier serum from Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Bro.
It's the only explanation at this point.
Keith Lee, the Flag Smasher.
Ooh. I am excited to see the all three big men finally like really start tossing hands this week. It feels like that's been a long time coming too, man. We talk about these long storylines that always have room to breathe.
Absolutely.
Like I feel like we haven't seen these guys touch much at all.
No, just mostly been like, you know, kind of building it up over time, and then it's slow burn of bringing in the other team. I mean, it was like we didn't know where the story was going to go between, you know, Jungle Boy, and it was basically between Jungle Boy and Ricky Starks where the story was going, right? Which would have been cool. But then they incorporate, you know, Swerve and his glory, and it really just, it added that little element that you like thought was maybe missing if you were watching it maybe. And
yeah,
it's perfect.
And going off that, we see Dan Lambert backstage. He says a new TNT belt will be presented to Scorpio Sky on Friday. And I instantly got so excited for that, man.
Yeah, man. And then, dude, oh, I'm so excited to talk about when we get to it. But it's like, I was excited. I was like, there's no way Scorpio is getting a stupid looking title, you know, like.
No.
And you know what? I'll say it. If we're going to have the tradition be, because like Miro got a custom championship, let's do it. Give everybody custom championships. Sammy technically had two, so that's kind of custom. You know what I'm saying? Like, if that's what we're going to do, if everybody gets a custom TNT championship, I'm down with that. You know what? It makes the belt. I mean, there'll be like 19 different belts. But man, that's just fodder for the video game, so fuck it.
Agreed. Agreed. So Tony Schiavone is on the stage. AEW Women's Champion Thunder Rosa is introduced. And Garrett, she does not have on the war paint.
No.
She said Serena Deeb is not a champion, and that Deeb needs to look at herself in the mirror and blame herself instead of everyone else. And this Sunday at Double or Nothing, the war paint will be on, and she'll teach the professor about respect.
Bro, why does the AEW music guy hate Thunder Rosa?
I don't know. And I've hated that they're constantly on the ramp. This entire feud, it feels like. There was one
week. Has she been in the ring for a promo?
There was one week. And no, it was Serena Deeb in the ring. I don't even think Thunder Rosa was.
Oh, yeah, no, because she dressed down
Dustin.
Dustin and Tony or whatever.
This build has sucked. That being said, not all of them can be perfect going into Double or Nothing. And I think
they threw this in late, which we talked about a couple weeks ago. It just got thrown in way too late, which sucks. But because other matches have been literally just thrown onto the card, but like they might just be on paper good enough. Not that this is not. It's just that this feud, you know, you want this feud because both are good enough on the mic that it should be awesome. And it should be like multiple months long. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe they run this back a couple of times. I don't know, but they don't do that with the titles though, so I don't know. It's an interesting one, you know.
And hey, you know, we got some interesting direction going here. Let's just hope the match is good and we forget about the build, right?
No, the match is going to be incredible. At least it should be, you know. So
yeah, 100% should be. So, Dr. Britt Baker, we see Red Velvet backstage. Red says she should have won the Owen Hart Cup, and Ruby interrupts. Red gives Ruby a book that has everything she needs to beat Chris Statlander, but Ruby tosses the book aside and says she'll keep some of it in mind. I like that Red Velvet's kind of taking the Statlander thing personal. She should.
Yeah, right? No, absolutely. I mean, it's Red Velvet. I keep saying this, but like Red Velvet is just so perfect. Like, I don't know why they hadn't just like, I know maybe she didn't want to turn heel, or they didn't want to turn her heel, but this is just like, I don't know. This might be Red Velvet. Like, just might be like one of those perfect, you know, those people that are just like, like, The Miz has never really been a babyface ever in his career, really.
The only time he was and it worked was against Shane McMahon.
Yeah. I mean, the only time he is against people that the crowd just does not want to win, you know, like, which, fair enough, you know. Yeah. But maybe that's Red Velvet's role. Maybe she's just, like, a perfect heel. I don't know, but we'll have to see, you know. But, actually, you know, for backstage segments, I actually, like, did actually enjoy this a little bit. And
agreed. And it made narrative sense.
Yeah.
So, anything that moves our story forward, right? Britt Baker versus Toni Storm, the Owen Hart Foundation Women's Tournament semifinals. This
quick commercial break in this one.
Yeah, quick commercial break. But I got to say, man, this match to me lived up to its hype. We were looking forward to
it. It felt a little short to me, honestly. Oh, like, it felt like they didn't get as much time as I thought they would.
It was only given about 9 minutes, I remember seeing. And I got to say, I think that these guys had some good chemistry together.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I would like to see this feud ran back.
Yeah, for sure.
Whether Britt wins this tournament, which I hope she doesn't, or, you know, whatever happens, I think this is a good non-title women's feud, which has truly been one of the bigger struggles in the company. And if we can keep this going, you know, hey, let's let Ruby get this win here and move on. And that being said, man, there was a couple good spots here. And, when she hit the Storm Zero and Baker rolled out and then slammed Storm and rolled her up onto the ropes and got the three count. I like the ending sequence. And did you like that Britt Baker got pretty upset when Jamie Hayter came out? It kind of showed a little bit of change in her character.
They're going to keep feeding that, just like they did MJF Wardlow for years. You know, like, I don't know how long it'll be till we see that, because I probably want to give Wardlow versus MJF time to breathe before they ever run that back now, which kind of sucks because I want to see them break off from each other at some point, you know, especially after a run in the tournament, man. Jamie is just so great. But, you know, like, remember what we were saying early on, it'd be awesome if Jamie Hayter won this tournament and it just didn't work out. But, like,
yeah,
whatever. We'll see. I'd like to see that feud eventually, but you know, it is weird that Tony was in this tournament at all. You know, because it's great that she was in it, but like, it is weird that like so early on in her career in AEW, she's taking such a high profile loss. You know,
hey, but we've said it before now. You can't. All these new debuts cannot be undefeated.
That's true. I mean, even Adam Cole.
Yep, you got to eat L's eventually. And I mean, eating it to the most successful champion doesn't hurt. Well,
that's true.
Hikaru Shida is the most successful champion. But yeah, so our main event here, Garrett. Oh my God. This was good shit. Samoa Joe versus Kyle O'Reilly. I really had to hold back from giving this my favorite. But a little preface here. Before NXT became 2.0, it looked like when Samoa Joe won that title recently, like, what is it, 7 months ago now, when he won that title, it looked like they were setting him up to wrestle guys like Kyle O'Reilly. And I truly believe this is the feud we would have gotten at the TakeOver. And holy shit, if it was anything like this, I would have been so down, dude.
Absolutely.
These guys work so well together. What the hell? Like, what the hell?
Oh, I knew on this, on paper, this, people were like, oh, this is Clash of Styles. Like, no, dude, they're actually kind of perfect for each other.
Yeah, man. Because Kyle has proven he can wrestle any type of body, and that's what makes him so versatile. We can put Kyle out there with Luchasaurus in a one-on-one, and it's going to be good. You can put Kyle
on. Honestly, and this is me putting Luchasaurus over Big. I think you can put Luchasaurus out there against anybody one-on-one and it's going to be good, but that's just
No, but just in terms of like some of the bigger, biggest guy wrestlers that they have.
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
You can stick him out there with a go-go. There you go. Someone who's pretty raw still. Because he made
Vaughn Langer look pretty good.
So.
Dude, there was some sick early trading back and forth of transitions and holds, and it's just like I think my favorite spot was the Joe set up a muscle buster and it got reversed into a Fujiwara armbar, which I did not think I would ever see. That was sick. And I really liked the finish, man. Like, this was just this was a good build. This whole tournament has just been incredible, which is what we predicted.
Pleasure.
Months ago, we predicted this was going to be probably pretty awesome because of the name Owen on it. You're not going to put nerds in those matches, and it's lived up.
It has absolutely lived up. I'm doing it too. but yeah, man, the Pele kick, like that whole sequence that resulted in the Pele kick, you know what I'm talking about? Like kind of towards the end,
mm-hmm.
Just so fucking, I need to see this match again. That's where I'm at. And yeah, so Kyle is wrestling at the pay-per-view, which we're about to talk about here in a second. So, hey, man, the Dynamite Go Home show. Thumbs up, thumbs down, World Garrett. What are you going?
This is a thumbs up for me.
Agreed. And it's a thumbs up for me as well. So let's dive into AEW Rampage.
This is Rampage, baby.
Rampage. Bryan Danielson versus Matt Sydal. Holy shit. This match had no business being this good.
Nah, I have Matt, people sleep on Matt Sydal.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, bro. I thought, could you believe how much offense he was getting, though?
I mean,
like, I feel like every time we've seen him wrestle lately, outside of the one CM Punk match, he kind of has a certain, you know, amount of offense. You could say a routine almost of the amount of offense they give him. Like,
yeah, I mean, Matt Sydal is kind of like the CM Punk. He's like kind of like the high flying CM Punk, which I guess technically that way, if you really wanted to be that, that'd be Johnny Elite, but whatever. Like, because for years he was just out there on the indies and they never signed him again in WWE. So he just stayed on the indies, you know, like.
Yeah, and dude, this was, I'm almost convinced if Danielson wasn't at the pay-per-view, maybe he would have let Sydal get one over him. How good has Sydal been for this company? It feels like every week we're talking about him one way or another, and the guy just wants to get out there and wrestle.
It's night and day from when he debuted in AEW, man. Like, phew.
He literally was at the very high of the mountain and just plummeted instantly with that fucking, that bomb.
I'm never going to forget that. That was one of the greatest moments of wrestling I've ever seen. But not as great as the Titus World slide, though.
That was great. But yeah, man, this was awesome. This was such a great way to, I was so happy to start Rampage off with this match.
Yes. And beautiful stuff.
I fucking loved it, man. So Danielson picks up the win, of course, with the wrist lock.
I think Danielson can counter any move, by the way. I wrote that in my notes. I think he can literally counter anything into any move he wants to, any submission.
Which, please, I just want next week. I'm not going to bring Batista back. He's already here, but Danielson, Zack Sabre Jr., fucking please have that match be before Forbidden Door. Like, I'm convinced they're going to have some New Japan guys over here because that one show they're all working.
Meltzer's going to have to give that match of the year. It has to be at Forbidden Door.
Like, part of me almost thinks maybe we'll get Great O'Conn wrestling Roppongi Vice at Dynamite. Or, you know, certain styles of matches.
Well, they did say we were going to get a bunch of New Japan AEW Dream matches on the road to Forbidden Door. So it's Danielson, not just going to be on
the Zack Sabre Jr. While I don't think they would do that one at the show, if they did them, cool. Just toss that one on Dynamite. Let it go in the main event and let them fucking roll.
You know the match we want. I mean, the one that I want super bad is Dante Martin versus Will Ospreay. But I mean, you know. Maybe throw Bandido in there. Fuck it.
Fuck it. Send it in. So, yeah, man. We go to the break. Video package highlighting the friendship between Hook and Danhausen. There was a great line from Ricky. I don't know when it was, but so I'm just going to say it here. They pretty much asked him, is Hook a member or is Danhausen a member of Team Taz, an honorary member? And he said, hell no. Fucking Ricky Starks, dude. The guy is gold.
The Hook betrayal arc has begun.
The Young Bucks, with Gangrel and Brandon Cutler dressed as Lita, were cosplaying the Hardy Boys. Matt was Matt was Matt Hardy. He even did the infamous fall. And Nick was Jeff Hardy. They went all out with this, dude. The video graphics, the fall, the moves, Brandon Cutler with the fucking dress up as Lita. I can't believe this fucking shit, man. What did you think of this? I mean, and Taylor Rust isn't there.
Shout outs to Rust. This was so fun. Like, the Young Bucks are really, really smart in the wrestling business in one way that they can take like one phrase and just fixate on that. And then it can make a whole segment out of it. And it's really great. And it's when, like, you know, I'm going to make a comparison that the Young Bucks will probably hate if they ever hear it. I think they are the Randy Orton of tag teams, where when they really want to show up, it is the best match on the card. But if they're not feeling what they're doing, it might not be that good, you know, like to most people's eyes. But I think people have these sort of like, I don't know if it's like the equivalent of like beer goggles for wrestling, you know, where they just can't see that the Young Bucks have ever had a bad match. But I'm not always 1000% satisfied with everything they do, you know.
Hey man, I'm one of those people, bro. Toss me the goggles.
You might be the man making the goggles, but,
cause it's even shit like this, bro. I just love it every time.
Like, that's what I'm saying. When it's good, it's great. But when it's okay, I'm not like 1000% on board with the Young Bucks. And that's cause, and maybe this is because I don't believe they're the best tag team in the world, but that's just me, you know? FTR all day, baby. Anyway.
What do you think of the Gangrel spot? Fun. Yeah, fun. Good for him, bro. Get him a
quick check. His leg looks like it's about to break every time he walks.
Get him a quick check, you know?
Fuck yeah, it. I don't know what's up with that. I think it's just the kind of boots he wears. But or maybe he's just got like long ankles or something. And, you know, Anyway, it was good.
Yeah, so this was fun, man. The Hardys came out and attacked, or well, they tried to make the save, but the Jacksons attacked Gangrel. It was pretty cool. So they all beat the shit out of Cutler. Yes. Max Caster with the Ass Boys, Billy Gunn and Anthony Bowens via wheelchair versus Dante Martin. Dude, I love it. The Ass Boys fit so well with
the Max Ass Caster.
It works so fucking well, dude.
It was a chaotic ass intro. You had good. I mean, it was pretty good for Max Caster. The Ass Boys getting the city wrong on purpose, which I thought was awesome.
Let them do it, man. This is going to benefit both of them. Like, because Max Caster, here's the thing. He was more than likely going to eat the pin here, right? Because Dante Martin is still, thankfully, being protected, which we were worried about once Darius got hurt, if maybe he's going to fall back down the card. That is clearly not the case. Thank God. But they also referenced these guys were in the first ever Dark Elevation, had a match together. They showed highlights from that match. Like, what? That's so fucking cool. I love this, man. Garrett, I Max Caster versus Dante Martin. A year ago, if you would have told me, hey, man, yeah, on a AEW Rampage, I would have been like, what's that? Where Bryan Danielson and the Young Bucks are wrestling? yeah, you're going to love Max Caster versus Dante Martin. And you're going to be all into the promos. You're going to be all into the post-match. I really, you're out of your fucking mind. But here we are. Dante Martin.
I just love that this was a match on a squash, even on like Dark Elevation episode 1, which is kind of crazy. Like 60 weeks ago. That's kind of.
Yeah. So
that's insane. You know?
Yeah, we get a video package hyping up the Owen Hart Foundation men's final between Cole and Samoa Joe, and then TNT champ Scorpio Sky makes his way down to the ring alongside Paige and Lambert, and he's presented with his new championship title. Oh, it's kind of got the LA colors, the Laker colors, if you will. Mm-hmm.
It looked beautiful, man.
It looks so good. He looked good. Paige looked good. And then America Top Team Jim gets broken into, which, for what it's worth, I don't hate it. I don't like Kazarian being with them. He's like the weird dad, but whatever. Gets Kazarian on the pay-per-view, I guess. Cool.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. They steal the BMF championship. Kazarian tells Lambert if he's interested in getting those belts back, make sure Sky and Paige are Double or Nothing. Conti tells them to bring Van Zant as well, so we're getting the six-person mixed tag match, Garrett.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be fine.
I didn't see that coming. I did not see
it. No, I don't know. Pay-per-view. I mean, maybe this should have been, and again, this is not meant as disrespect to any of the performers involved. Maybe this, no, you can't have Scorpio be on the pre-show, man. Like, yeah, no, I don't
you
know.
You have to have your champion on. And
what do you bump to the pre-show, man? That's the problem. All the matches they threw on are kind of like too big to put on the pre-show. Is O'Reilly versus Darby too big? Yeah, it's too big.
As far as I know, there's only one pre-show match.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You could have two. So usually they do. But the reason why, do you know the reason why there's only one match on the pre-show? I heard Tony Khan say this during the Double or Nothing preview for Unrestricted today, which is because that's how they're getting around the main event being pushed back, is they're going to have new stuff that happens if the finals go long or whatever.
Okay.
And so they can't have like a whole lot of wrestling on the pre-show, I guess, because of that. Because they're going to be starting the wrestling like when the show starts. It's something like that. I can't remember the exact details.
Yeah, I'm sure there's something along the lines. Science behind it, and I like that.
But yeah, some wrestling math going on.
So cool. Ethan Page gets on the pay-per-view. Kyle O'Reilly. I skipped that, but Kyle O'Reilly is facing Darby Allin at Double or Nothing. I'm very shocked by that. I did not see that coming at all, but I am so down with it. Get these guys on the show. That, I think, is going to be a quick one, though. So with 12 matches now on the pay-per-view, one of these is going to be a squash.
No, I think some of these are literally just padding matches for if they need to, you know what I mean, to stretch for the main event or whatever.
Yeah, so it should be good. Other than that, we've already talked about the main event, the Britt Baker promo after. We kind of talked about it a little bit, but Ruby was getting booed. I mean, kind of weird, right? So
let's talk about Chris Statlander's pre-match promo really quickly. That was so good, dude.
It was unbelievably good.
Like, that's why the crowd turned on Ruby. Like,
every once in a while, we see one of these Mark Henry things, and it's like, holy shit, that's how you take advantage of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still like it because it kind of gives me like a weird Saturday.
There was one a couple of weeks ago that was super good. Let me look that up.
Yeah,
there was
and it worked. So, yeah, man, I gotta say this: Britt Baker versus Ruby Soho, cool. I thought it was either Britt Baker versus Hikaru Shida or Soho, and this is what we get. So, it works for me. We will talk about who we think are gonna win these matches here in a minute. Or for you guys, you can check out the podcast. It's going to be already in your feeds by the time you're, if you're already here, our Double or Nothing predictions. Holy shit, man.
Yes.
So, yeah, I guess closing thoughts. Come back, hang around this weekend, man. And then we're going to be back Wednesday with a new format on the show. Not really a new format, but we got some new images, some new stuff. So, other than that, Garrett, are you ready to make these fucking predictions at Double or Nothing?
Absolutely.
So guys, skip. Make sure you check that fucking video out. We will catch you on the flip side, Vision.
KOTOR, Heart of Darkness, out and out. Darth Markham, YouTube.
You need to leave!